Hello and welcome to The Course. I'm your host today, Lee, and I'm speaking with Assistant Professor of Economics and the College, Duran Ravid, from the Department of Economics. His research focuses on mathematical models that study questions about the kind of information people choose to communicate and learn. Professor Ravid is here to talk to us about his career path and how he became a University of Chicago professor. Welcome to The Course, Professor Ravid.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, Duran, can you give us a general overview of your career path from your college years all the way to becoming a professor at the University of Chicago?
Yes. So, probably the path, like in college, what I was doing when I enrolled to college in Israel, the way you kind of enrolled to colleges is by choosing your major ahead of time. And at the time, I didn't really know what I wanted to do. Israel had like a big recession at the time. I think it was generally there was a recession now in the world. It was after the dot-com bubble burst. And the path that I wanted to take of doing computers seemed to be, being a computer programmer or working in tech seemed to be less helpful or going to be less successful, or at least seemed to have a lot of career uncertainty. And so I was very sort of unsure what I wanted to do. And, you know, I was looking at the news at the time a lot, and the whole news was obsessed with the recession. And I had a thought that kind of at the time I thought was sort of very, now I realize was very childish, which is that, you know, computer programmers, they have job uncertainty, but economists still seem to have jobs when, you know, there are recessions. So I decided to kind of go and become an economist. And so, you know, I studied economics in the university and also enrolled to studying psychology. And during my studies, I also got a job working at this startup company. And there I was kind of helping the CEO and the founder kind of in his fundraising efforts. I was kind of doing most of the back office stuff of like helping him write the business plans and doing spreadsheets for investors and stuff like that. And while I was doing that, I was also, you know, during my last few years working as an RA for this psychology professor, Yehiel Clark, who had me read various papers in mathematical psychology mostly, but also some behavioral economics. And while doing this, I had kind of two things happened. One is I really disliked the process of helping the CEO raise money. It was really just kind of selling and marketing the company. And I had this feeling that there was something that I felt was very fake about it. And I really disliked that feeling of trying to convince people to kind of invest in this thing. And even though there are doubts and, you know, that it's a high risk activity, very likely to fail. So that was sort of, on the one hand, it didn't like this sort of fake aspect of sales and marketing. And on the other hand, the professor I was working for, Yehiel Clark, gave me this paper to read by Amos Tversky, who was sort of the co-author of Daniel Kahneman on much of his Nobel winning work. And this paper just kind of caught my attention. It was the most beautiful paper sort of ever read, I think even until now. It was like about mathematical theory of similarity. And it really started from sort of motivating empirical evidence, then formulated a simple but beautiful mathematical theory, prove some results, and then use these results to interpret existing empirical findings and also kind of do more testable implications of first he actually found in experiments. And this sort of idea of like having, you know, this kind of complete work where you start from kind of things that facts that don't seem to quite make sense with what theories that we have, developing a complete theory of it and then testing it just seemed, it was just beautiful to me. And so I couldn't help but wanting to do that kind of work. And so that led me to, you know, seek doing academics and becoming a researcher. So I enrolled for like a master's in Tel Aviv in economics. And from there, applied to PhDs and I got admitted to a PhD in Princeton. I worked there, and then lucky enough to, after graduating, get a job at the University of Chicago.
So, Duran, how would you explain your current research interest to someone who knows absolutely nothing about economics?
Yes, so that is always a little bit difficult because my research is in mathematical economics. And so, you know, often if somebody asks me, what do you do? I say mathematical economics, and that's often enough for them not to ask me follow-up questions. Because really what I do is tricky to explain to somebody who knows nothing. The way I think about it is that I develop mathematical tools for people to understand various economic phenomena. We know that a lot, you know, to really do economic research, you have to do mathematics. I mean, people kind of sometimes try to say, well, maybe you could do it in other ways. Economics is fundamentally about trade-offs, about saying, well, I'm willing to give up a certain amount of one thing in order to attain more of another. And that's the end math. And so what I do and what sort of my broad field does is try to develop tools that enable us to analyze various economic situations. And that's not easy. The kind of situations that I focus on are ones that involve people's information and how people get that information and how that information interacts with their incentives and results in the decisions that they make. And so that's kind of how I would try to explain the field that I work on to somebody outside of it.
Well, thank you for breaking it down. And what were you like in your middle and high school years? What kind of student were you? What kind of person were you?
I was an awkward student, awkward teenager. I spent most of my time in front of the computer playing online computer games, which I was certainly addicted to. The actual diagnosis you would give me. And when I wasn't doing it, I was trying to program stuff. I had especially in middle school, I had some friends that we kind of had these competed with each other about who's going to program better. So I was spending a lot of time doing that too. As a student, I was kind of a slacker student until the middle of my high school. I usually managed to get by just by kind of listening to class and preparing for exams right before the exam itself. And in high school, I sort of actually had a teacher at some point. I wasn't doing very well in math at that time, and generally was kind of a little bit struggling. And my math teacher, after an exam that I did okay and got what in the US would have been a B+, he came to me and just said, when he gave me the exam back, he said, "You can do better." And somehow that really drove me to think, you know what, I think he's right. I think if I actually invested and applied myself, maybe I can do better. And it's sort of the last maybe year and a half of high school, I also sort of started working more, in my high school actual studies. And yeah, so computer studies. I also did a lot of playing games. So both computer games, as I said, but also with my friends. When we would hang out, at that stage in high school, you would less sort of hang out and play computer games, but it was more play Dungeons and Dragons, play backgammon a lot, and it was finally some kind of poker as well. So we're sort of full of games, I would say, and would be maybe the way I would describe my teenagers and high school years.
So I know that you were initially interested in tech and programming, and that makes sense with all of the interests that you described. I wonder, though, if there's anything when you look back on that time in your life that you're like, oh, yeah, it makes total sense that I became a professor of economics.
Yeah. So the reason it was, I really think that recession was kind of the big deal. So at the time, in my teens, I was obsessed with computer games and, as I said, and was programming. And by the end of middle school, I was sure that what I wanted to do was work in tech and be a computer programmer. And then there was, and at the time, it was also in Israel, there was this company called Mirabilis, which was made one of the very first instant messengers that was purchased by AOL for $400 million or something like that. And that made everybody, you know, even people who were not obsessed with computers at the time, like called it, could be interested in wanting to work in tech. And that all came to like a giant halt in the 2000s, which is exactly when I sort of started high school, where the dot-com bubble burst. And so at that stage, it was basically a fear like, oh, you thought tech is the next big thing, but actually it is not. And at that stage, you know, I was looking at the news a lot. My father was also kind of obsessed at just looking at like the margins, like stock markets, the currency markets. He was like investing, trying to invest some money in it, you know, sort of the combination of my father's interest and the general sort of gist of the Israel psyche at the time, at least the part of the Israeli society that I was exposed to, was sort of all just about economics. And so in some sense, it's not clear that I had a lot of other kind of options in terms of like, you know, what would be the thing that would sort of catch my interests and make me think that that's where to go.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because with an economics degree, you can do a variety of things. What was it about academia that attracted you, that made you want to pursue that as your career?
So I think it was academic curiosity. It was just an interest in solving problems and understanding the world, which, you know, that, as we said, that paper by Amos Tversky, when I read it, it was so, it basically, like, with the structures, basically provided a vision of what science or social science should look like, at least according to, you know, what Amos Tversky did. And even though that was a paper in psychology, you know, when I was studying psychology also, I was doing what you probably would have called something like a double major in economics and psychology. You know, the viewpoint that the kind of work that Amos was doing in that paper is something that I couldn't really see in modern, you know, the modern psychology scientific literature, academic literature. I saw it in the economics literature. And I really felt like this is, you know, I would love to do this kind of work. I would love to be able to kind of view the world through this lens and create, sort of try to provide these sort of theories of the world that are mathematically sound on the one hand, but are empirically relevant on the other.
It sounds like as much as you were interested in finding a stable career path, it sounds like you were also interested in giving back or contributing to society in a meaningful way.
Yes, I wanted to understand the world. I was attracted to questions of economics and still, you know, even all of the research that I do is mathematical, I still find myself interested in trying to understand, you know, what's causing unemployment, what's causing poverty, and how you could have helped these issues. My career path has ended up leading me kind of far from answering these questions. But when I was just even in my free time, just deciding what to read or, you know, what kind of information to consume, when I was found myself attracted to reading business newspapers or economic, you know, it's an Economist. So various manuscripts that dealt with economic issues. And I, you know, at the time, actually, it's kind of sometimes hard to remember it, but I was also pretty politically active in high school and like a little bit later, though my interest was less, the activity was less about economics, but I was, you know, I had this feeling that I wish I could help people, and that kind of drove me towards this, towards understanding problems of the world. I admit that eventually at some point, you know, my interest kind of moved me away from solving the most urgent problems to solving problems that I found more fundamental in terms of our ability to interpret the world and study it, in part because of my dissatisfaction with the kind of answers that I saw.
I really appreciate that explanation and your own insight. I'm also wondering who in your life supported you as you made your way to becoming a professor at the University of Chicago, because that's not, you know, I know people who who are graduate students or who were graduate students, and it's a difficult path. Who was there with you helping you get through it?
Yeah, it is a hard path. It's not easy, and it was hard for me as well. My parents were incredibly helpful throughout my career and my life. They supported me throughout the entire time, both emotionally and also financially. They helped me a lot. I met my wife in my third year of grad school, Heather, and she was, after we met and we got together, was a huge source of support the last few years, especially for the last year, which is what is called the academic job market, which is brutal. And I would not have been able to survive without her. You see, and Clara, the psychology professor that I mentioned, probably had the most important, you know, even though he supported me with the job and kind of tried to develop interest, but, the support was not throughout my career, but his support at the time was probably the most influential in nudging me in the direction of academia. And after him, was also helped a lot by sort of my academic advisors throughout the years. It's like Billy Blom, Miami advisor at Tel Aviv, and Farouk Ghul, who was my PhD advisor, and Wolfram Bessendorfer, who were incredibly helpful, both in terms of supporting me, just making sure that I was on the right path, but also giving me kind of the right advice at the right time. And I remember there was like one meeting with Farouk where he very delicately gave me the advice that I should be changing kind of the way I'm thinking about problems and the kind of problems that I'm thinking about. And, that basically implied that my current situation was not very good. And the way he delivered this advice and the kind of the path that he outlined were incredibly helpful, spoke just the right balance to prevent me from becoming depressed and thinking that I have no shot of making it on the one hand, but also sort of pointing me in like the right direction later on. So, yeah. So in terms of getting the job at the University of Chicago, I think these are the people who were the most helpful.
And is there something that you aspire to do beyond where you currently are? Maybe that's a particular research project or a position that you'd like to get to someday?
In terms of things I would aspire, I think in terms of positions and, research, I follow, the research that I think I can contribute the most to in terms of like the combination of like my value of what I can do and the value of the question. But I think the thing I would aspire to do or to be able to do better is to be able to advise students and become a better teacher. I think that I seems like I do a decent job communicating the material and getting students interested. I think that seems like students seem to really like my teaching style, but there seems to be always some students that I don't quite connect with, either as both as a PhD advisor sometimes and as a professor or teacher of undergraduate courses. And, I really wish I could sort of break that barrier without sacrificing the students that now I manage to teach well. So that is really the thing I think I would aspire to do or to go, so become a better teacher for students.
I appreciate that. And can you share a little bit about what the most fun parts of your job are, as well as what is not so fun about your job?
So things that are very fun are first when approaching a new problem and managing to find that sort of first spark of a solution. That is something that is it's hard to describe how fun that is. Another thing that is extremely gratifying is advising PhD students. I find that, you spend a lot of time both in meetings and in emails and trying to give them advice. And the sort of the development is always sort of incremental. It makes small, it develops a tiny bit at a time. And it's very, you don't quite see it as it's happening. But then when they're sort of towards the end of their degree, you kind of look back and you can see how much they have developed, how well they're doing, and how far they've come. And it is really nice to kind of see that and to think that maybe I had a small impact on the process. In terms of things that are kind of very that I don't like in academia, even though it is something that or a field that is supposedly kind of, you know, based on merit. At the end of the day, it has a large people component to it. A lot of whether it's the question as to how successful a person becomes, a lot of it depends just on social aspects of the profession. And that is something that I extremely dislike. I extremely dislike, you know, this need to kind of sell or sort of market or try to get your name out. It's something I disliked even, I think, you know, since my 20s that I was like doing work in a startup. It's just something that I really do not enjoy that you wouldn't have, maybe I don't think that would be present in academia, maybe entering it. But of course, that it's there. And that is something that sort of I do not enjoy. Yeah, I think that's the aspect that's least fun.
So what would your advice be to people who are considering entering your field?
My main advice is to generally be kind of flexible about your career, what you want to do. Being academic is gratifying on many levels. You get to, you know, get to think about interesting questions. You get to face intellectual challenges. You get to sort of solve problems, or at least try to solve problems that are big and important. But it's also extremely difficult. You constantly get criticized because everything that you do, like the whole profession, is people who are critical in their attitude towards research. That's what this is based. You constantly face criticism. You constantly face this pressure that you think you could be doing more. You know, you manage your own time, which is great because you can be flexible. But also that means that any moment that you do not spend working is a moment that you decided not to spend working. And so you have this feeling that, oh, you know, I should be working more and I should be doing more work. And that sort of pressure is very, I think, is very difficult to handle. And people should, you should know that you will need to handle that pressure in a way that balances your work, your work and your personal life. And you need to be the kind of person who can do that. Also, you know, academia generally is not the super well-paid profession. I mean, I think professors at high institutions like in Chicago and get paid fine, they're very fine. But in terms of the payment that you can get compared to, let's say, what you would have done with similar education in the private sector, that's often, especially if you're going to something that's not for, for some fields, it's much lower because a lot of what you get is you get this kind of compensation in the form of the kind of work that you do, which is very enjoyable. And so, and that shows in the payment. So, you know, you have to, when you're kind of deciding whether you want to be academic, you know, it's a path that you need to invest in and sort of go through it. I think it's a path that's extremely gratifying as well. But as you're doing it, you should always be flexible and sort of ask yourself, is this kind of what I want to do? Is this something, am I really enjoying what I'm doing? Am I really enjoying this path? Or maybe this is like a path that might be worth, you know, maybe it's worth considering other things as well. That's really something that I would advise people to think about this career. I would suggest to kind of just always keep their eyes open and think about themselves. Are they enjoying what they're doing? Is this something that they think it's for them? Or is maybe there are other things that they would like to do.
And finally, Doron, you grew up in Israel. That's where you were born. How has your experience being someone that is not originally from the U.S. benefited your career? Do you think it's benefited your perspective? And maybe it's benefited you as a human being. Can you talk a little bit about that?
The one thing that really benefited me is having the experience of being foreign somewhere. So, you know, when I came to the U.S. to study my PhD, and until then, I was about 25 at the time. I grew up most of my life in Israel. I was 2 years, like when I was very little, I was 2 years in the States for my father's job. But that was like when I was three and I was six. So it was not really as grown up in any way. So by the time I came to the US when I was 25, I've grown in Israel, I've seen things and got used to the way things are in Israel. And suddenly I came to a place that is very, very similar, but also extremely different in a lot of different ways. And just having been in this position where I see how many sort of different assumptions I was making on my environment by default, that I think just immensely benefited me. I'm not sure if in academia exactly, but definitely I think benefited me personally, because it makes it easier for me, I think, at least to accept, you know, I'm not sure it makes it easier for me to notice, but it definitely makes it easier for me to accept situations where I realized that, wait, I was making this sort of assumption by default, just out of my own, and I was just assuming it without thinking. And now I realize that it's a bad sort of assumption the way I live. And it, you know, I think being able to accept that is something that came from having grown up in one place and then finding myself living many years in a different place.
I've been speaking with Assistant Professor Doron Ravid. Professor, thank you for your time. And course takers, if you enjoyed listening to today's interview, please check out the other ones. You can find out more about the University of Chicago through uchicago.edu or the university's campus in Hong Kong through uchicago.hk. Thanks for listening.